Hi, good afternoon. Last time I was a little bit optimistic that we should move on to the natural part of natural computing, but I guess it's a good idea to say some more words about how these different algorithms compare, as well as to start with a bit about this discrete particle swarm optimization. This might be helpful. And in between, there is this nice list of animals here that all have given rise of certain algorithms, but I will not go into details for several reasons, but I should at least name them or discuss them a little bit. So in order to get further with discrete version of the particle swarms, it might be a good idea to remind ourselves what was it about. And all we have to do is simply to take this kind of framework, that's why it's written here in this less mathematical way, and transfer it to a different domain. And so we will go through this in a number of steps, and I hope it will have this kind of desired effect. Of course, so one question is, why should you do this? This will become more clear in the very end, because there is this kind of tendency that whatever meta-heuristic algorithm you are using, you will have the best results with the one which you know best. This is simply an result from experience. So as soon as you have an idea what to tune or whether or not to put in some heuristic search or some additional features or coding features, for example, then you will probably perform better unless the problem is really not suited. So genetic algorithms have some kind of drawbacks, or genetic programming requires also that there is really this kind of a good computer program rather than a very fuzzy description of the problem, which might be more captured by a probabilistic algorithm like ant colonies. But otherwise, for more generic problems, it seems that there's not too much of a difference, although these particle swarms have turned out to be much more flexible in a sense. And so, I mean, in the beginning, it was just that how to try it. You have maybe two related problems, and one is continuous, and the particle swarm works very naturally, and another one is discrete, looks similar, and so why not to try it? And then it simply turned out that particle swarms do not bet. But it just needs a few steps to go on. So what we had was that we have, or like characteristic for these particle swarms are these positions coding the problem, as well as some velocities that tell what kind of changes we do with our candidate solutions. And so each of these particles, each of the candidate solution knows, gets this information about objective function, and this can be used to compare itself with neighbors or with the personal past. And this information is stored and used later in the further development. And there are these three sources where the information comes in. Of course, what the particle did before, how it developed its or evolved its velocity, is of course some indication of what it has found out about the problem. So this kind of self-confidence, just implied by this parameter or controlled by this parameter omega, is one ingredient. And then it has some kind of personal experience, which it's maybe at times good to go back to. And finally, there is this kind of peer pressure, so if others around you, or the best ones among them, are performing in a certain way, then maybe it's a good idea to take this into account. So there's this possibility either to look just for the global best or for the best in some somehow defined neighborhood, or just like in the more natural swarms, just to average out, so to say, among the behavior of the nearby individuals. So this was what we have seen before, more now in the formal description. And so it's mainly about this kind of combination of these three different ways how information arrives finally at these states of the system, of the particles, that has to be translated into a different way. So it starts already here with some kind of strange symbol, but here it's just a multiplication that each component gets some randomness from these random vectors, which are not particularly specifically described here, but which mix a little bit the information from different components and from the different sources, such that there is not really any advantage to either of these sources of information, but they vary with random strengths, and so different combinations of them are tested. So now in order to, so usually states are real numbers, and then it's more like straightforward, and theory, what we have seen last time is this constriction rule describes movement or the behavior of the swarm quite well, and we have some idea how to set the parameters that in this case of the particle swarms, it's not so much of an fiddling around with the parameters to make it work for a particular problem, as long as the state is fairly homogeneous and there is not any kind of deception, so to say, in the fitness function. But otherwise, it just follows, and if you make sure that the swarm is neither converging too fast or just diverging and not really finding any or settling into to better values at a particularly promising region, then it should be just fine, and that this kind of compromise, this kind of balance is found between this exploration and the exploitation. This is made sure by these well-known parameter control rules. In order to move now to, for example, if the states are given in a discrete set, like integer numbers or possibly also binary numbers, which doesn't make things naturally easier, it's just a matter of what kind of dimensions you are dealing with, then there are a number of options how you proceed. So, I mean, usually all numbers which we have in a computer are discrete, and that's why it's not really necessary in many cases to think of this kind of continuous state space as a particular necessity to run the algorithm, but you can just pretend everything is fantastically continuous, and if you actually need some kind of a state, which is now called S here, just to have some difference between the states of the algorithm and the state of the problem, then you just integerize it or have some other scheme for mapping it back to the original problem variables if this is necessary. Often enough, of course, this fitness function would not like this. So you need at every generation to do a number of fitness function evaluations, and so in this case you just have to do it each time step in order to find the fitness. There may be different particles can be mapped to the same fitness value, just because they are distinct only with respect to some kind of places after the comma and or behind the discretization step, and in this way they will not really matter too much. The more interesting case, or when this becomes more visible, that it's a discrete version, is of course if you have only discrete states, then there are some possibilities to make it a little bit more soft in a sense. So people have talked about quantum particle swarms in the sense that so quantum bits, for example, they don't have really a decided value, but they oscillate between different values, and in this case you have maybe rather an probabilistic mixture between the states, and you decide more and to go to the one value or to the other value or to one discretization step or to the next one by some kind of probability, and this probability essentially interpolates between the discrete states such that there is not really any difference. Only it might be detrimental to the course of the algorithm, at least this could be expected, that the performance is by this kind of decision which you have to take whether now if you have this probability that a state is either 0 or 1, by this decision which you have to take, of course you lose some kind of information which the algorithm has accumulated by still the continuous velocities or probability values, if you wish. And in this case, this kind of losing of information could be less helpful, but in this case you can realize that there is a community that maybe if you have one just by this probabilistic decision doing the wrong choice, and there might be other members of the swarm that do the right thing, and in this way there will be some kind of an averaging over these different possibilities. So this is like what you can do. Of course, this all assumes that essentially it's a continuous problem underlying to this, but maybe by observation or by because it's just a counting process rather than a measurement process, you have arrived, or you have to use some deterministic or discrete descriptions. Of course, there might be also possibilities that it's just discrete in a sense that there is not really this kind of possibility for interpolation. And in this case, we need to use a more systematic approach. But I guess we should look before at the other options, how they behave. Yeah. So what you have to keep in mind is that these kind of parameter settings that have been shown to be useful for the continuous case, for these different parameters which we use in this discrete version, just in the same way, that they might not really be as suggestive as before. And so it turned out that often they are much smaller values are actually better, although there's some kind of other balance, which I also will mention later on. Of course, what kind of thresholds, for example, you have to take, or how strict you impose the probabilities, this is also a matter to optimization. And so, in a sense, you get more parameters in this algorithm that governs this discretization. So it's hard to say anything theoretical unless you really arrive already at a kind of different algorithm, and then suddenly you find some other observation in the representation of the algorithm. So what is to be noted, that although the situation is kind of fishy, maybe, so you can try it, but it doesn't really tell anything. It seems that it competes quite well with those algorithms which have more genuinely and discretization built in, and that's why maybe it's better just to concentrate on one algorithm rather than to have always all this bank of different methods, which has of course been tried by people for a more fair comparison, as we will also see later. So maybe it's a good idea to talk a little bit about this problem of sequence alignment in this context. So what we have is a number of sequences which at this moment are perfectly continuous. So for each for each value of a continuous time parameter, we are given one value, and they may more or less smoothly vary with time. And we are given a number of such sequences. So m can be 2, but of course, the more interesting or the more complex problems arise only for large m's. And what you would like to have is this kind of warping functions that you shift back or force the time a little bit back such that all of them are suddenly become equal. Huh? Of course, this might not really be happen, especially if it's real data. So even if they were produced by this warping process, and now the task is to reconstruct what has been warped in what direction, they still might not be equal just because of noise, and that's why it's more natural to have this kind of minimization problem, which obviously gives a zero if this condition is met, but otherwise it gives a small number, and this might be good enough. So in the sense that for each pair of sequences out of all of them, we just measure the difference after warping, and this number of differences, which you might perhaps rather normalize, this tells you how good your choice of warping function has been. No? So obviously, you can maybe warp everything just to a single value or something, which is maybe not really a good idea. So that's why it's important to have some kind of regularization scheme. You don't want to move points very far away, but you would like to find some kind of compromise between a good match. Yeah? So one curve should maybe a little bit advanced and the other a little bit delayed by having for I maybe just positive values and here negative values. And in this way, to keep it under control, it's important to have some kind of an additional condition for the norm or for the size or extent of the warps over all of them by just minimizing both this functional as well as each of these ones or maybe the sum of these ones. But obviously, if you have an continuous parameter, then for each of t, you have to find the w value. And this is an infinite dimensional problem. And so it's probably not really solvable with everything we have. So there are different possibilities. Either you can make some assumptions that you, for example, construct these w's by Gaussian functions, for example, to introduce some smoothness in the problem. So this could be helpful. But the more straightforward version would be that you just choose the discretization. Instead of this integral that we have here, we have just the sum now. But if this is the length of the interval, then you just take each corresponding 2 points and define the difference between these. But obviously, what happens here, for example, if you add here something, then you are not really comparing the corresponding points, but you make some kind of compromise that you move one further and one back, and in this way you find maybe some more favorite match, again, of course, with the same regularization condition on w at the same time. So what you have now in order to solve this problem is you have this for each of the sequences and for each of the time step, you have one number which you add or subtract from the time, and this can be used as a state. You may also like to have some additional scaling factors in front, but I think we can ignore this here, and it's mainly to have some more homogeneous problem, we just consider the W. So this is what you use as a state vector. This is quite a large vector possibly, but for 2, m equal 2, then I think everything is still under control. But now by having this kind of data, as it also it's given by some any kind of data set, and as well as also this kind of discrete steps for t, then only the discrete values of w are meaningful. So that it's not anymore an continuous optimization problem with respect to x. So because simply if you have q defined only at discrete points, then you can just move either to the next or to a few more arguments, but these will be discrete steps in the problem. But on the other hand, because this underlying time is a continuous process, our options previously are just applicable, that you are using in continuous version, but if you want really to calculate it, you need to make sure that this is an array, for example, that you hit in proper entry in this array, and not just somewhere in between. Also, maybe it's also a good idea to consider interpolations. If w happens to be to have a good, or if this x is moved by the continuous velocity, which is no problem here in this case, is moved to like 1/2, for example, then you, of course you could also write in your energy function and in your objective function a mixture between the q value at the same point and the q value at 1. With the equal weights, and this gives you probably a good approximation, but I don't think that this would be important in the present in most of the problems. Of course, if you have so this is wrong here. I meant to write 2 to 4, yeah? Because you cannot just run the you cannot just run the algorithm and care about discretization only later if this fitness function doesn't allow for any evaluation on a continuous scale. So a bit more interesting it becomes if you want to have this, or if you need really to make sure that you are not too harsh. So especially if you have a binary problem, you have for the x value only 2 possibilities, and in this case it might be necessary to think a little bit about the relative weights which you give to each of them. And there was this what I mentioned already, this quantum particle swarm, means just some kind of probabilistic probabilistic particle swarm. And so in this case they had some kind of an adapted rule for the determination of the V. So what you do here is you try to write it exactly in the same way. But these differences between good and the present state of either personal or global, they are now formulated in a slightly different way, namely by introducing 2 new parameters. So what you do is you just add here the bit which is found in the solution. So this is a binary number now, in the personal best solution or in the global best solution for the other equation. And you weight it in some way. So you give it a weight of 1. That means you, if it has a 1, then you move this so-called velocity a little bit in this direction. And if it has a weight of 0, then you move it a little bit in this an amount of b in the other direction. So what you are doing is you are not really flying in this sense, as we have seen before, but because the space is not so large, you have only the possibility either to tend a little bit more to the 1 or to tend a little bit more to the 0. So usually you give some kind of preference, maybe if it's like both 0.1, then it wouldn't really lead you anywhere, so you should move it in such a way that maybe so we have this kind of choice that the zeros are pointing downward and the other ones are upward. So it depends. This is another set of parameters in addition to the alphas and the omegas and the same for the global best. And this is put together here in continuous form. So these are now continuous values by this interpolation. And this tells you how you will proceed further, how much you move towards values from the personal or from the global best. And you just repeat until you arrive anywhere. So essentially you estimate in each particle differently what is the tendency to move either to a 0 or to a 1 for each of the components of the solution. What we may remember is that there was this compact GI, which we just briefly mentioned, where from the genetic algorithm also this kind of transition was made. So in genetic algorithm, there are also different individuals in the population that have either a 1 or a 0 at a particular position. And this compact GI meant to interpolate or to find some kind of an preference of the prevalence of the of a certain gene or a certain component in the population. So here is maybe not just this kind of single probability vector, but each of the particles has its own probability vector, and in this way there are more possibilities which actually we are missing in this compact GI, such that it was mainly a weak approximation to what genetic algorithms are doing. So you end up essentially by this type of a discretization at something which is similar to maybe to an island compact AI, where you have a number of averages which in the GI are taken over populations, but here happen inside each of the individuals by having, in addition to the state, some other vectors that represent these probabilities. So in this way, there might be some kind of tendency. So if there is an indication from other individuals, from the global best, for example, to have a bit set rather than unset, then this probability of once another particle has felt this will probably tend to increase further, but still it's less dynamics. You will not see this kind of oscillations or swarming behavior in this type. And so this was also found to be to lead to suboptimal solutions, and so people tried to compensate for this, and then by this kind of analogy they just put in some genetic algorithm operators, crossover and mutation, in order to make it a little bit more explorative. While on the other hand, of course, here in this particular paper, the local search options were used by some simulated annealing, meaning simply where you put some more noise and then you reduce the noise again, and if it's better what you get at later, then you are using this one. So it's easy to introduce noise here is if these velocities correspond to a decidedness between the two possible values in this binary problem, then you sample either from a more or less decided version of a certain individual. In this way, if you have some kind of good idea or spend some time to decide about A and B in the solution, then you would be able to just run it in a very similar way, and you get a reasonable result. But the more interesting problems arise whether you can really stretch it to the case where you have neither a continuous velocity nor continuous states. And for this possibilities, it may be a good idea to go up and to use some more abstract description. So we just have to remind ourselves what we need in order to write down these essentially only two equations of the particle swarms. So we need to have some possibility to subtract positions from each other to know whether how close an particle is to a better particle. So we need to be able to subtract positions from positions, and we need in order to update positions by what is in the velocity, we need some kind of addition of this type. Then we need to add different components of the velocity, and maybe there's also a need to have some kind of parameters entering in here, which is in this fully discrete version not necessarily a trivial enterprise. But so we need these four types of operators, and so these have to be decided on the particular description which you have. So there's one of the ways how you can use this integer type of particle swarms, which is implied if you want to apply it to the particle swarms to the traveling salesman problem. And so here in this case, it's really the states are these kinds of lists of cities on this graph with some weights, and here you have this just adding the weight length of each of the components. But it's not so clear really how you should compare two such lists, how you should subtract or add it. And for this purpose, there is maybe you really need to think how you can express this in this way. And so for the states, we have imposed by the problem this vector which contains n natural numbers, each just one. And we have to make sure that the velocity which operates on these states has some meaningful interaction with the states. And the most natural way to do this is to use permutations. such that velocity completely loses now its meaning, its physical meaning, but just becomes a permutation. So we can maybe start as a single case, like the slowest velocity in our velocity space being an just exchange of two nodes. So you have your list of cities and you exchange two. And for a more general velocity, we know that we can express any permutation, any arbitrary permutations by a sequence of pairwise permutations. We consider velocities as these kind of sequences of pairwise mutations. So that means if you are given this object here, that means at time step or at the first step you apply I1 and J1, you exchange these, and from what results you apply the next exchange of I2 and J2, and later on you will mix more and more if you go through the sequence, which the length of the sequence is the length or the modulus of our velocity. Of course, some may repeat or may be revert what we did before. So the velocity is just written as this, but it is actually an permutation of many cities. Yeah? But we can imagine that if we just do this exchange of two pairs, then we are in some sense closer to the origin than if we really do many of these ones, then velocity is larger and it brings us in one time step further away from where we are. So, and then we can, from these considerations, we can easily construct these four different types of operations which we need to do. So for example, if we want to subtract, maybe we should ask what is the negative velocity. And so in this way, we just apply all the permutations in the opposite order. So we start with the last one and then we go back the sequence until the first one. So if we have now two applications of such a velocity, two applications of the permutations, then we would do a lot of exchanges, and then we just do these exchanges in the backward order again, leaving us with a original state. If you add something and subtract it again, then you should be back where you are. So that's the natural way of describing a negative velocity. If you want to add a velocity to a state, then this would in this context mean now you just apply this permutation to the state. And difference, that's if you have two states, then you can ask, of course, what is the permutation or what sequence of pairwise permutations you have to apply to x1 in order to arrive at x2. So if there is a large number of pairwise exchanges necessary, then they are far, and if it's just a single one or no, then they are very close or identical. Finally, the sum of velocities here may be written with this O plus. It's just meaning that perform first this permutation implied by V1 and after this the other ones. Of course, this is not commutative because actually the composition of permutations is rather like a multiplication, but for our purpose this doesn't really matter because the algorithm should find out it's always the same sequence in the algorithm. So multiplication is a little bit more difficult because you can hardly multiply in multiplication, but by this idea that many exchanges are longer than few, we just, if you have a number between 0 and 1, which we multiply to our, so that means we just remove all the number of pairs. So for example, if you have 10 pairwise exchanges in our velocity here, and omega is 1/2, then we just remove the last 5 and we are happy with using the first ones. Or maybe we have to concatenate, but this is a little bit less natural, and we don't, well, maybe we need it for if you have alphas larger than 2, but actually also here in this algorithm, the parameters turn out to be much smaller usually. And if it's 0, of course, we don't do any, we just reduce it to the identical permutation and nothing happens. Yeah. So the algorithm seems to look very much like what we had seen before. So here this plus means apply this permutation to a list of cities. And here means you have to figure out what permutations you have to do from here to here. Then after this, you do this for this one. You maybe add or subtract a few out of these ones and apply this one after this one. And finally, you take what you had before and you apply this again. But when I look at it more naturally, I think you start with these ones and then this and then this. Yeah, so in this order, yeah, to be consistent. So what we have now is completely algebraic or discrete version of the particle swarms. It doesn't really swarm anymore, and again you also find it that the performance is not really great, yeah, because there are too many assumptions that might not really go well, yeah. So what is really the relation between this velocity and the permutation? But as soon as you work a little bit more, so for example, you make sure that you introduce some additional diversity, and again, this was done by operators similar to a genetic algorithm. Then you arrive at quite considerable and unexpectedly good performances here. So in this sense, it's an kind of genetic algorithm in the disguise of a particle swarm. But so this tells somehow that the flexibility or the maybe generality of the particle swarms is still there. And we, although there was some interpretation necessary to have this kind of formulation, it's not something completely unnatural, and everything could be intuitively at least made clear. So this much about this last one. So if you look for discrete PSOs, then probably you will find mainly these types of discussions, but they are usually not really necessary if you have an continuity underlying to your problem. Yeah, in addition, there are a lot of other animals which have been proposed, and I don't want really to go into detail, and I think it's not even necessary, because most of these algorithms are just slight variants of what we have been talking before. So for example, there was this honeybee algorithm where the bees are not really using pheromones, but they come back and tell where they have been and do this waggle dance in order to initiate bees to go also to these places. But in effect, you have slightly different relations between whatever the attractiveness of a region and the number of bees that is attracted as compared to ant colony algorithms. But if you remember, in ant colonies there were also these parameters alpha and beta in the probability rule, which you can tune, and then the behavior is more or less similar. So it's the same for the firefly algorithm. There's this kind of light intensity, which in their case corresponds to the pheromones, and again, this is just another variant of the ant colonies. Other algorithms come to maybe the bat algorithm. It's a variant of the particle swarms. But so what you are doing here is that you, in addition to maybe this kind of wavelengths for the bats, which they have to find in order to move optimally, what codes the fitness in these algorithms. They have also other possibilities that they can maybe sometimes switch off or switch on their calls and get less or more information, similar to these kind of graph-based particle swarms, where you also somehow avoid getting some information and induce more diversity in the population in this way. And so by this kind of whatever, how the light intensity scales or how the wavelengths is exchanged between bats, you have sometimes maybe even better performances as compared to a not optimally tuned ant colony or particle swarm. But this would also be very well implied by the no free lunch theorem, in the sense that there might be some problem which is just that this particular formulation, or this more specific formulation of the algorithm, as in this bat or firefly, is really it's really what you should have done, and but more specificity somehow counteracts this idea of meta-heuristic. You are not able really to prove that they are on a more general scale, better or worse, but only on some kind of well-chosen problems. And this is what people have been talking about a lot, so how you should really compare different meta-heuristic algorithms. So, because if you open a paper, then what happens is that the data sets which are used to test it, also the authors make some effort, are usually kind of pragmatically selected. So if it doesn't work for a particular, if your nice algorithm doesn't work for a particular data set, then you probably will choose a different data set. And even if you don't have some bad intentions of cheating or something like this, then if you compare it to other algorithms, then usually you know your own algorithm much better than most of the other ones. And so there is still some kind of advantage. And so there is a possibility to have this kind of competitions where you are really not, where you do not see the data set before you start, but maybe just a number of similar data sets, which you can use, of course, and that's what you should do to optimize your parameters. But then this evaluation of your algorithm is done offline on some server, which you cannot access anymore. So it's completely autonomous, and you have to live with the result, even if posterior you can think, now if I had some other parameters, then it would have been better. And of course, you should maybe also think about what kind of measures of the complexity you are actually using, and the sensitivity, whether it's whether it's also possible to transfer it to more general cases, but this is also implied also by this kind of competition scheme which is used here. So this has been outlined a little bit more detailed by Dorigio again, that you should make sure that there is some kind of fairness involved here, but I will not really go to this because I want to present some comparison which was published some years ago already, where you have maybe this typical Jandek algorithm, particle swarm, ion colony, this kind of frog leaping, which is a little bit odd. Yeah. So there you just have frogs in some subpopulations, and the best frogs are allowed to go somewhere else. So it's similar to an evolutionary algorithm, except that you are using this evolution strategy, that you are using this frog as a metaphor. And then there is this pneumatic algorithm, simply having a genetic algorithm and some heuristic search in this case. And I'm not sure whether anything is visible here. So what you see immediately is that there is some problem. So what they do is these Maastrichtian functions, and I think this is Aclay functions, or some kind of typical problems, which are tested in different dimensions. And then you have to consider your usually the best performance and success rate. So meaning that the algorithm actually found the global optimum. And so there are some differences between between these, especially in this success rate. So usually they are not really distinguishable, so they will have quite good values. But some, like here in this case, the PSO are a little bit more powerful in this respect. While, for example, this was this frog algorithm, shuffled frog leaping, was maybe not too bad, but it was not really efficient enough to do this locking in into the optimal solution. And so from this type of considerations, you get, of course, some, here in this case, particle swarm optimization performed somehow best, simply by combining the different factors, so how often it won, how much time it needed, and if you calculate this different for the other algorithms as well. So even if they occasionally found maybe a better or an as good solution, they did less so on average and took longer time in order to do so. And that's why from this competition, particle swarm optimization came out well. But I'm afraid that this is more like a random result. So next time you have a different set of problems, and you might end up in a different result simply. So another possibility is maybe not to look just at these kind of standard problems, which have some kind of simplicity, which not yeah, they are homogeneous. Even if they have a lot of minima, yeah, you have maybe some kind of typical distance between minima, and so jumping from one to the next can really be enhanced by good parameters if you have this kind of length scale in your diversity built in and so on. So another possibility to be a little bit more serious is to just have people who are really interested in solving a problem and are looking for possibilities how to do it. And seriousness of such people can probably be measured if you just look at costs which are involved in this. And so I like this experiments which have been done for what is called power generation expansion planning problem. Yeah? So the idea is simply if you want to build a new electric power station, for example, this costs a lot of money and you need some kind of guideline whether it's really worth it. Yeah? And there are a number of models which are really used to project maybe like 20 or 40 years into the future. Of course, you can ask whether these models are particularly useful, but it turned out that they are more useful than just doing black box predictions that you say, yeah, it has developed in the past like this and maybe it will continue so we can use the information for the past also in the future. But apparently it's much more so in these particular applications. We are really talking about tens of billions of dollars or of pounds. It's better to have some kind of an understanding of the different processes. So what will be policies, what kind of natural resources are they, how they run out, rather than to project into the future. It's maybe better to consider the most likely development of the underlying network of causes that have relevance to such problems. And so this is a particularly nice example, so you can be sure that some kind of small improvements count and that there is also some kind of importance in a good decision in this respect of what concerns sustainability issues and so on. So in this sense, well, you end up with many different processes who are interacting with each other. Yeah, it's also how the market is constructed, how the consumers react, and what kind of exchanges with foreign countries are done. So you have a lot of constraints in this way. There are a lot of laws which have to be obeyed. Yeah. There are some kind of constraints that fuel mix is planned by the government, for example. And it's essentially a discrete optimization problem because you have there is usually some kind of typical size of a power station, and either it's worth to build one more or not. Yeah. And because there are so many different interacting forces, you end up with a number of very complex dynamical processes, which are not easily calculated. Yeah. And of course, everything depends on what kind of decisions you are taking in the future year. So you cannot just find the optimal solution, but you need to have some kind of a strategy how you will behave in later years as well. Yeah? And so for this purpose, they just used a number of different, really a large number. So for example, all this taboo search, which is very basic, very fast, but not very powerful, just searching randomly and stop to search in places where you have been already. And the other ones I think you should know. And there's also a hybrid approach. I was a little bit wondering why not the other ones are also considered or combined to a hybrid approach and simulated annealing just in a similar way as this taboo search, more random search, but with some kind of bias in a good direction. So parameters are pretty standard and they were very open about this. And what you see is if you take maybe a relatively simple version of the problem where you want to look ahead only a few years